Show, the radio show about comics. Today I'm interviewing Bruce Greenville, and this is going to air May 15th, so in a couple of days the Crazy Show will be opening at the Vancouver Art Gallery, so that's why I'm sitting here with you. So maybe we'll talk about what is the Crazy Show and why is it awesome.
So, well, the show is a big survey show, I guess. In some ways it was a chance for us to bring together a whole range of work that we think is really interesting and hasn't been pushed together in the same way before. So that would be comics, graphic novels, manga, anime, animated cartoons, video games, and visual art. So all of those drawn together into kind of one sphere to really see what those relationships are, but obviously to celebrate each of them individually. So we have kept it into kind of segments or different parts.
So they take up like different rooms.
Yeah, so the floors, there's two floors, so it's a huge show. It's like 20,000 square feet. It's a big show for us, probably. Well, it's the biggest type of show that we do. And each sort of series of rooms is devoted to, you know, ones to comics, ones to graphic novels, a whole series of rooms to manga, another series of rooms to anime, that kind of thing. So, but they're grouped together But obviously, there's overlaps and points of reference between the two, and you know, there's a nice piece where Kim Deitch's Boulevard of Broken Dreams is the series of pages that we chose relates to the Winds of McKay, showing in the animated cartoon. So there's kind of nice sort of, you know, some more elaborate, some more looser kinds of relations between the two. So it works. I think it works out very very nicely. So there will be those points where people can see those relationships, and you know, certainly if you think about video games, which is a really under kind of represented area in terms of sort of museums looking at it, if you look at video games and you look at the way that they relate to animated cartoons and anime and the manga and even comics and how how much they're influenced by that, it's a great opportunity to see those kind of things come together.
Even for myself, I was a little surprised by the all the connections made. Like I'm a comic guy. I know all the comic stuff, but seeing the video game stuff, like the guy from The Sims, things like that, it's quite the complex narrative, I guess.
It is, yeah. It's a complicated narrative, and we wanted to keep that complexity. I mean, I think I always think of it as a kind of a big field of activity, you know, that we sort of call visual culture. And so I was interested in the possibility that what would happen would be that these things would be in the field, you know, and sometimes they touch each other, and sometimes they're kind of, you know, at the other end of the field, and one's at the other end of the field, but, you know, they're still sharing that same field. So there's a kind of, it's this sense of a community of producers that are involved in visual culture that, you know, share maybe perhaps narrative, share composition, as you know, share some of the techniques, share technologies, that kind of thing, and yet at the same time they have their certain distance. I mean, if you talk to Art Spiegelman, he said, why would I be in a show with video games? You know, no. Like, it doesn't make, I don't even think it's interesting, you know, and in some ways it's true. Or Seth, you know, it's like, there are other ends of the world, but at the same time, you know, whether or not, you know, Art thinks about it, there are definitely people in the video game community who think Art, you know, and what he does is absolutely essential to the way they think about representation and creating narrative and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Art's the master of the metered storytelling.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, people look to him as a kind of, as a model, as technique, and in terms of producing those things. So, you know, there are intentional and unintentional relations between them, and I think it's for us, it was this chance to do it, I think, and as far as I understand, you know, for the first time, to bring that stuff together in a way that not only allows that kind of conversation to go on, but also provides our audiences, who, you know, are predominantly interested in the, you know, more traditional visual arts, to start to build a language and a facility of looking.
You know, it's kind of a chance to get rid of the highbrow, lowbrow.
Yeah, I don't think that's a relevant. You know, I think that was a really a kind of an important part of the '60s. And there's a moment in the show where I've got some Roy Lichtenstein paintings and Claes Oldenburg's sculpture in the show as part of the exhibition, and that was about a kind of, you know, the sort of high low culture thing, and mm-hmm. them appropriating that and, you know, kind of being so daring for doing so. That stuff has disappeared almost entirely, I would say, and though there's,
I'm happy about that.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, I'm happy too. I think it makes a lot more sense now when you see the way visual artists have a relationship to visual culture. I think it's much more exciting.
Well, it's interesting, like looking. I don't know as much about what comic people you have, but when you look at like the amount of craftsmanship that, say, someone like Harvey Kurtzman would put in comparison to a lot of other stuff, or Will Elder, or, you know, these guys doing stuff in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, no, there's some knockout stuff. You know, speaking of Harvey Kurtzman, I mean, that was one of the things that was a kind of a big surprise for me, was that Kurtzman's drawings and getting them here. You know, and one of the luxuries, of course, of putting together the show is this sort of the pleasure of having a close look at this material. So the Kurtzmans that came in, more recently we just got some of the drawings for The Organization Man from the Jungle Book, and those drawings are so beautiful. I mean, they're really, this is a guy who really thought about, you know, the way that these things look. And, you know, you get the pulp sort of, you know, paperback version of it, and you don't see it. And then you see those original drawings, and you realize this is, you know, this is somebody who really knew how to draw.
Well, that's why the EC, they did the black and white reprints of all that stuff. It was just blown up. It was immaculate. Yeah. Another person that kind of fits in that you have in the show is the George Harriman. Which is really fascinating stuff. What kind of choices of air apparently to the guys.
Well, yeah, we had Chris Ware very kindly lent us his Harriman, some of his Harriman drawings that he has. He has some quite spectacular drawings, sort of three very late drawings. You know, they're basically the ones that were on his drawing table when he died, and a large Sunday page. And then we also have a lot, in terms of Harriman, what we also wanted to get was some of the pages themselves. So we actually got Sunday pages, you know, the strip pages, the black and white ones. And so there's a real mix of it. It goes really from the 20s forward to really to the very end. And there's some, again, a nicer kind of range of material with Harriman. And yeah, it's wonderful to revisit that.
Also mentioning Winsor McKay.
Yes.
I'm really curious, are these originals, or are they going to be blow-ups of Sunday pages? Or I guess the Sunday pages are huge, too.
Yeah, you know what we're showing? Well, this is of course, the one of the interesting conundrums and challenges for a show like this. But actually, the Winsor McKay that we're showing was chosen by the curator, Tim Johnson, who selected the animated cartoons, and he chose Winsor McKay's Gertie the Dinosaur as his choice for the first animated cartoon, and a spectacular work. So we have some of the original drawings of for Gertie. We have about, I think four more came in the other day from Mike Glad, collector down in the States, and so I think we have like about 16 drawings that are really beautiful. Talk about, I was looking at them last night again with somebody, and just looking at the kind of line and imagining, you know, there's like 10,000 cells or separate kind of drawings that were made for the film, and imagining what it would be like to have to draw that set again and again.
It's interesting, you look at one of his Sunday pages, and he did one of those a week, and it's just like most people nowadays couldn't imagine that kind of, and some artists still are very, Kim Deitch does 16 hours a day drawing, and I don't think Chris Ware is up there, but he's jealous that Kim is able to, he's on the record saying that, when you heard that Kim Deitch did the 16 hours.
Damn. There's clearly a huge commitment on the part of many of these artists, and that was certainly one of the issues. It came up for us a lot with the manga artists, especially, where even just to contact them and get, they're so protected by their editors and the companies that have to keep everybody at bay in order for the artists to meet the incredible deadlines, and then of course the tremendous demands on producing the thing. It's so complicated to produce that work, and I think that's the one of the great challenges for a lot of these artists is that there's no simple technological solution to making this faster, and yet the demands are, you know.
Well, the interesting thing with the manga is a lot of those guys would actually have a whole room of guys working on it too. Like
it's obviously a huge
about industry. Some of them are like that, and then there's do you have any Tezuka in the show?
No, it's not Tezuka in this. So the two curators that we worked with for that section of the exhibition, Kiyoshi Kasumi and Toshio Ueno, they actually decided that the gods of manga and anime should be in a sense, you know, revered but not present, and that they would, you know, in a sense, return in the work of the younger artists. So they really focused on work from the mid-80s onward, and said, you know, that's great, the gods are there, but, you know. And so I begged them to, include Otomo, and they finally conceded. But, you know, it was a tough, they wanted to, and rightfully so, they chose really great
Who were some of the newer manga?
Yuichi Yokoyama, who, you know, is published by Picture Box, in North America, but Yuichi's work is well known in France. But Yuichi's work is just fabulous, and will be, you know, part of the exhibition. It's actually Orajima, again, a kind of guy who's, these are guys, some of them are kind of right on the edge of sort of, well, a crossing different territories, like the music scene as well as the manga scene, but really moving kind of in between that. So it's a younger, so in many instances a younger group, and then others you would know in terms of their work. So it for me it was a really, there was lots of surprises. It's a field that I know a bit about, but not a great deal. And so for me there were lots of surprises, and I think great choices.
mysterious roots and branches, blood and love. Now it's raining, smoke is moisture. Please enter, you are weaving in iron spreadsheets to comfort you with love and with feeling.
Noticed you got Marv Newland.
Yeah.
Who's a Vancouver guy.
Yeah.
And I was actually, that was one question is that, I know the comics, there isn't any Vancouver folks, but now I'm like, there's
yeah, it's interesting. Guy. Yeah, so Marv, well, Tim Johnson, who selected the work for that section of the exhibition, Tim, you know, did a really interesting selection. You know, some of them are the obvious ones, like, you know, the first feature-length animated cartoon by Lotte Reiniger, or the you know, Winsor McCay's cartoon, or Toy Story, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah. Some of them are obvious, Dumbo, and others, though, you know, you wouldn't necessarily pop to mind. So I think what Tim was trying to do was to find somebody who was an independent animator who had a kind of made something, you know, that just couldn't be done any other sort of way and was really represented that. And he had remembered seeing Marv's work when he was sort of a student, basically, mm-hmm. and a number of different works, and decided this was actually the one that he wanted. Black Pillow was the one that he wanted to choose. So it was, it's a perfect sort of mix, and I think Marv was very pleasantly surprised, and certainly
yeah.
It was great. It's a beautiful work.
And he even has history in the underground comic scene of Vancouver.
Yeah.
So that's a nice crossover there.
It is nice. Yeah, well, and those crossovers are there all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I think they're kind of, sometimes you know about it, sometimes you don't, but there are these linkages across the media that are they're definitely part of the show. So, yeah, no, Marv's a nice part of the show.
So, basically, you kind of coordinated all the curators, kind of master curator, and then other folks would decide. So Seth would decide on a certain amount of Canadian folks, or is it just him?
No, Seth. It was Seth, and yeah, the way it sort of worked was with those guys was we had a lot of preliminary discussions, even just to talk about, you know, comics. Why would you have graphic novels? It's such a kind of arbitrary category. It doesn't really make sense. And back and forth, and back and forth. And and Bogart and Seth had been kind of on my list, and I wanted them to, you know, they could have gone either way in terms of how they chose. And so in the end, they decided they would work together, and they would kind of, you know, accept the arbitrary division that I had kind of offered them between graphic novels and comics, but in the end to work together because they couldn't see the distinction anyways.
Yeah.
And so no, they came up with their own criteria. You know, we worked that through. That they talked about, well, narrative, which was a key kind of one, but you know, and just not a big difference. I mean, it's narrative, sequential narrative, so much a part of all the work, so that doesn't, you know, it's not a big criteria. But on the other hand, they said, you know, well, you know, maybe it helps us kind of eliminate gag comics or that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
And then they looked at formal innovation. You know, it had to be somebody who was really pushing the kind of the craft in a certain kind of way, and then also to look at obsession as another kind of filter for them. It's some sort of obsessive character, whether it was a kind of formal one or a content or whatever. So they used those criteria, and then they, you know, from that, you know, they could hone it down a little bit, but it was definitely a huge struggle, as you can imagine.
No, I was,
go ahead, try and choose eight.
Yeah, no, I was really surprised, because, like, when I heard the list, there's no Charles Burns or Gary Panter,
And it could easily have been, you know, gone that way. So, oh, actually, one thing that we're doing too that acknowledges that, and this is exactly, so every time I talk about the show, somebody says, you know, this is, you know, what about so-and-so? And, you know, are they going to be in the show? And of course, it's not, they're not going to be in the show. Why isn't Gary Panter in the show? It's like, well, you know, it's not that he's not, you know, interesting. It's not that he wouldn't fit into the show. It's just that, you know, when you're choosing eight, and this is the structure that you create, this is it. So what we did to kind of mitigate against that was we set up this area called Fanbase, which is a place for people to come in and go, you know, I love the show, it's great, but really, you should have had this and this and this. And so these are the reasons why you should have had this and this and this. If they make a compelling argument, there's lots of, you know, little form thing for them to write out on. If they make a compelling argument, we'll go buy that thing, and we'll, or the film or whatever it is, we'll bring it in and we'll put it there for other people to see. Because really, that's exactly what, in part, this culture is about, is saying, you know, these are things which are meaningful and, you know, should be seen and understood, and that it's something that people share. So we've tried to build actually spaces into the exhibition that allow people to kind of have those conversations and to bring that stuff forward, knowing that no exhibition can ever tell the story, you know, as in a complete kind of way. I went to see Masters of American Comics, you know, and it was...
And there was a lot of debate around that.
Exactly. And
that was a big picture box earlier.
Sam
A. Bell went on a tangent.
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's lots of possibilities. So I think it's an inherent part of the media, and it's really great to, you know, to have that discussion. But it's one of those things where people really feel like they wanted to leave that out.
Well, I find it really interesting looking at the selection of people. One that surprised me, but didn't surprise me, because it was nice to see it, because he is so new, is Kevin Izenga. I've heard is a part of this. And to me, he's one of the most interesting, innovative new faces out there.
Yeah, and that was the nice thing about having Seth and Art, you know, kind of debating it, because they both, you know, share a lot in terms of their kind of sense of values and
classical aesthetic.
Yeah, and at the same time, they both, you know, are slightly different in certain kinds of ways. So it was great, you know, Seth argued long and hard for Kevin Huizenga. It's not that Art argued against it. It was just that, you know, when you're paring things down, can you leave this guy? And I think, you know, I think that Seth argued in really articulate ways for, you know, exactly those things. This is a guy you should look at a little more carefully in order to see the qualities of that work.
Yeah.
So that was great.
I think, you know, he's got a book in him that's going to blow people away. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, he's only got, you know, what, 200-300 pages of stuff, and some people take a long time to get to that point.
I quite like it. We've got a really nice... a selection of work here for everything from sort of sketchbook, you know, sort of him just sort of starting to conceptualize it to the final drawings, and really it's like shows it gives a nice insight into the way he works, and that kind of very methodical, very focused.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious. He's one of the more literary
Well, the piece they chose was the Jeepers Jacobs. And you know, it's a great debate about the hell, you know. And so, you know, it's pretty fascinating theological argument wrapped up in this comic, and I think it's quite brilliant.
And the interesting thing is, comics field tends to be ripe with atheists. So the interesting thing about what he's done with that story is, I mean, he's very, you know, he's not saying a lot, but, you know, he's got his own spiritual beliefs and he's exploring it.
Yeah.
And it's not something you actually see a lot. It's more the kind of arts vegan than where it's, I don't have the religion, but this is something that's stuck in my head as part of my background.
Yeah, your culture, yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, the Justin Green's Inky Brown Meets the Holy Virgin Mary definitely, you know, rattles those chains in a kind of interesting way. And then, so, you know, two steps away is Kevin Huizenga's work. So there are those kind of moments where there's a kind of reoccurrence in a very different kind of way, and the debate, you know, sort of picks up again. Certain themes show up again and again throughout the show. Works very well that way.
Now, some other folks you have is Jerry Moriarty, who's really, to a lot of people, pretty unknown.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm impressed. Like, I'm not surprised he shows up, because I know both Chris Ware and Art Spiegelman speak the wonders of his work.
No, and again, you know, I mean, and not to say that, you know, Art and Seth didn't agree. It's that, you know, they really sort of said, well, you know, look at Jerry anymore. And Seth said, sure, yeah, he makes perfectly good sense for a variety of reasons. But, Art was definitely kind of this, you want this in the show. And I think the other thing that Art was kind of working with in terms of the exhibition was also to say, you know, the constraints around the medium have shifted, and the future of graphic novels and the future of comics or just comics in general is also takes into account kind of the shifting the boundaries. And so someone like Jerry, who plays between those two worlds very comfortably, the kind of the fantasy world and the comic world, who sees, you know, some aspects of both in his work, does have a place in the show, in their mind. You know, so there's a, you know, equivalent, you know, Philip Guston in the, you know, in the graphic novel section, or I've got Raymond Pettibon in the visual arts section upstairs. For me, they're all equivalents, working, you know, in sometimes.
Well, Pettibon is like old school punk boy too.
Absolutely, yeah, no, and that's the formative influence, is this kind of powerful role that music and sort of art and visual culture had in the punk movement, that they were embraced and seen as a critical part of that movement.
And someone like him is interesting because the influence he's had on the comics is so, people don't really know, but like the Hernandez brothers are very, like, you talk to Jaime about him and he'll just go off.
It swings. I mean, that's what's so interesting for me, is that there's a respect and an understanding. That's different than the pop thing, which was kind of an appropriation, a kind of very bold appropriation. This was for someone like Pettibon, you know, to have a comfort level and an understanding of what it means to come out of the zine world and be part of that, and to also be part of the visual arts world, and vice versa.
And just so people know who he is, he's the guy that did the Black Flag covers.
Absolutely, Chris. That's the sort of benchmark from which everything moves out on Raymond's work.
All the punk rock posters.
And what we have in the show, in fact, is his earliest stuff that he did just after he came out of UCLA. So it's late 1970s work and early 80s. And so it's part of it is actually a number of the pages are from the zine that he published called Captive Chains. So it's a really, it's a great, it's never been shown before.
And this is part of the crazy show.
Yeah, so this is the visual arts section of the show. Yeah, we have 42 drawings that this gallery lent to us for the show. So,
wow.
Yeah, they're really great. Yeah.
Who else can we expect from that kind of so many names to list off of it.
There are so many names in the show. And that's
flip this book open.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I have to do, is I have to, you know, sometimes just flip through the book to remind me of the whole range of people in the show. There are people that, like, you know, again, in the visual arts, someone like Christian Marclay. Christian's, you know, his area is really, he's very much as much as anything a performance artist who works a lot with sound and a lot of in a sense, music culture, but also works with visual culture. He did a series for us on on prints, huge, large-scale prints, where he basically tore the kind of word, onomatopoeic sort of word out of comics, older comic books, and collaged them and then blew them up into a larger scale. But he's very interested in sound and language, and sort of take that, only the language element of the comics, and to kind of revisit that as a visual artist and as a sound artist was something that, you know, was really interesting to the show. So there's this kind of really... There's a wide range of work, and I love the crossover, you know, the kind of respect for each other's media that goes on.
I interviewed Ron Ricci. I don't know if you know his stuff at all. He was part of the show that Chris Ward put on in Arizona.
Yeah, recently, yeah.
Yeah, and he had an interesting observation went on about the how comics, how letters are comics themselves, too.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That kind of the sense of the word and the language is so predominant, and certainly some for say someone like Yuichi Yokoyama, language is a critical part of his manga and the sort of sound. If it's not narrative language in the sense, but it's the sound language that, in the same way, it's abbreviated and kind of restructured in the same way that the comic composition is restructured. So it's definitely a part of it. Yeah. I think it's again, you know, think the way. What you see in a show like this is the diversity of approaches that people are using in the work.
One thing that, I got a question, kind of going off the art talk, but the choice of doing the show, because it's the big summer show for the Vancouver Gallery. I'm curious about that choice in comparison to last year where we had Dali and Monet, and it such seems like just such a switch.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it is a switch, and then in other ways it's about saying... The same thing I said earlier, where there's a big field.
Mm-hmm.
Visual culture is a massive field, and it has a long history, and it has many kind of configurations and ways of looking at it. The visual arts are part of visual culture. I mean, they're really, it's not the sort of hierarchy, and that somehow at the very top is the visual arts. It's that visual arts are part of visual culture, and it has a certain set of criteria and expectations. For us, you know, this is all corporate, but basically, you know, we have a strategic plan.
Yeah.
And one of the aspects, the sort of key points in our strategic plan is to address visual culture. So, you know, a few years back I worked on a big show called Massive Change, which was a look at contemporary design and a rethink about contemporary design. Same scale as this, but a real kind of, basically, a manifesto for new ideas about design. And, you know, we're committed to that kind of work. And I see them, you know, they're not always done for the same reasons. They're not always done with the same criteria. They don't, you know, they don't have the same cultural value in terms of how much people are willing to expend. But always, but at the same time, there's a huge dialogue. And one of the great things is that, you know, I think everybody should have visual literacy. So this is part of what we do. I mean, we've committed to engaging with visual literacy, and we think there's a great audience for this. We think that in the summer, we think that the tourist audience and the broader audience than that will come to the show. Maybe people that have never been to the gallery before will feel a lot more interested in coming, you know, go see Grand Theft Auto in an art gallery, because there's something there that, you know, I'm going to see it differently. Or, you know,
and for a lot of people that don't know, the Vancouver Art Gallery is the prestigious art gallery in Vancouver, so to say.
Yeah, so we think it's a good project for us to do, and we're pretty confident there'll be a good audience for it as well.
I'm excited about checking it out.
Good, yeah, soon it won't be long.
We'll be right back. lots of questions to ease our tensions. Please let's go. She took me to an empty lot in East LA, between the river and the 5 freeway. Eager lips as if I'm her existence. Forgive me for leaving, for bringing along baggage from old days and sadness from new ones still to come. I'm willing to let things be left as they are, she said as she opened the passenger doors, her legs extended, fishnets exposing a section of skin. Oh, 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 oh.
The show is you're doing a series of lectures.
Crazy talk.
Crazy talk.
That's right. Everything became crazy during the show, unfortunately. And
I like it. I do like that it's crazy with a K. It's just yes. That little touch of Harriman.
It is, and for me, Harriman is such a touchstone for thinking about comics, but also even thinking about how complex characters can be, and the crazy cat is this thing, you know, this sort of gender switching, you know, impossible
or gender neutral.
Yeah, or you know, well, that's the thing. I mean, it goes. You can look at it all these different ways, and it's ambiguous. And I love that ambiguity in that work. I think it's really for me, it was a touchstone in this thing. And I'm also interested in this, you know, that crazy community that. In a sense, Harriman developed, and for me, that crazy community of a cat and a dog and a mouse is the same community that's the visual culture community, which is sort of, you know, throwing bricks at each other and, you know, kind of at the same time completely tied together in this sort of inseparable way. And for me, that's what, you know, crazy just is.
No, that's a good way of relating the two. I kind of see that relation because it is there are. Definitely separate communities. In it. Part of that comics community, not part of the video game community, but I can appreciate the different aesthetics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, nobody thinks that somehow, you know, that everybody in the comic community should be somehow, you know, tight with the visual with the video game community. That that doesn't make any sense. But on the other hand, there are points of continuity and shared interests that it's kind of interesting to think about. Crazy talk.
So yeah, so you have Spiegelman doing a lecture on the 16th.
Yes. Now I can't tell you the dates. I'm not good at that. I'm not organizing it. So Sierra can probably do a better job on that. And Marie Lopez, who's organized it. Those guys, they put together this series of talks. It's a really interesting group. Will Wright's coming. Tim Johnson's coming. We had some help from our friends at Electronic Arts, Glenn Entis, who's been a big help in terms of organizing the show and doing a lot of thinking about it. Glenn, also worked with the EA to bring some of those people in. So we have MM from Paris, who are two designers, Matthias and MM, and they're coming as well to give a talk, and they're really interesting designers. They're part of the No Ghost Just a Shell kind of collective of work that is part of the visual arts section of the exhibition. So it's a really interesting range of people. They're I've spent time with Will, with Tim, and Art. They're incredibly articulate about their field, and they all give great insights into it. So it was a chance to bring them into the community and share that.
Maybe something that you can answer more fluently is, who are these other curators? Because we know who Seth is, we know who Spiegelman is, but who would they be? What's the context that makes these guys interesting?
Yeah, what I looked for when I was looking for co-curators were people that were sort of producers in the field that were pair of peers, basically, sort of top producers that, and part of the reasoning for thinking that was that this is a kind of a new field for museums to work in. There's not a lot of curators who have the expertise, who could put together an exhibition that a lot of people would respect for whatever it was. I mean, the thing about someone like Art Spiegelman is that you may not agree with him, but you can respect him. You know, or Seth, or any of those guys, is that you don't have to agree with them. He's got a certain sort of viewpoint. So if you ask, if I asked you to choose eight people, eight comic artists or eight graphic, artists who do graphic novels, you would come up with a different list, probably. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you can respect the selection. So Jerry Moriarty, why? But Jerry Moriarty, there's something there, and it's not the...
They know their field well enough.
Yeah, that they can do that, and you can be, there's going to be something interesting in that selection. There's going to be combinations of and configurations that you're going to look at when you see them together, and you're going to go, wow, that is, okay, I didn't think that at all, before. So that was part of it, and then part of it was the lack of expertise in the field, and then also seeing that here was people who really knew their field very well, who were conscious, historically conscious of what was going on, and could make something interesting happen there. And it reminded me a lot of what happened. I mean, I'm an expert in the visual arts and contemporary visual arts specifically. But it reminded me a lot of what happened in the 70s during the kind of minimalist and conceptual art period, when it was the artists who made the really interesting exhibitions, who knew who was out there doing the stuff, and put together the shows that really told the stories very differently than anybody would have imagined, and launched conceptual art and minimalist art, into the kind of art world as a kind of higher profile. So for me, it was a kind of return to that sort of sense that
Warhol.
We need those people to tell us a story, to articulate that. That history in a certain kind of way. So Will Wright is—he's the guy who designed The Sims, SimCity. He's got a game coming out called Spore that is— they're knockout games. They're top of the field in terms of popularity and conceptualize and reconceptualizing what constitutes a video game. And Will is an incredibly articulate person who can say, this is why you should look at this game. He sat down, I went down to visit him in California, and he sat down on the floor with a whiteboard and sketched out this history of video games that was, this connects to this, and this is it, and wipe off the board and on to the next, and he's incredibly articulate about it. So you've got this guy who not only makes it and understands it from a maker's point of view, but also understands from a from the sense of a larger historical overview. Tim Johnson's the same way. A film director, works at DreamWorks Studio in Burbank, wherever it is, and he you know, he's does great stuff. Did Ants and did Over the Hedge, and you know, there's you know, solid, really interesting animated cartoons, and has this sort of large view and can speak very clearly about why you should look at that thing and why this connects to this and why this should be. So in his selection, which you know is a classic kind of selection in many ways. In other ways, there's wonderful linkages and points of continuity. So they're really sharp people, each one of them, who brought that kind of sense, both the maker and the historian together in their work. Kyoshi and Toshiya, who selected the manga and the anime, have a slightly different, they have that more curatorial kind of like certain distance. They're not makers, yeah. They're, and there's a kind of a distance from it. But on the other hand, what you see with, especially Kyoshi, who's deeply involved in the manga community, you could see him, kind of, his understanding that he brings to it. Odajima's work, who, he does a thing called Mu for Sale, which is kind of nothing. Mu is a void, or nothingness. And so it's this very, very funny, very droll kind of vision of not
Mu
only
or Mu?
Mu, M-U.
Okay.
And it's like, it's Japanese for the void.
Okay.
It's this, you know, it's a very different kind of thing, but nobody would know this work unless you were deeply embedded in the community. So, you know, they bring that, a similar type of insight to the show, but it's slightly different than that. What does it mean to be an artist, producer, and do the curatorial work at the same time?
That sounds interesting. Like everyone's taking on an aesthetic of really diving into who really has done so much stuff instead of just going, okay, well, we're gonna do a comic show, so we'll have Chris Ware, Dan Klaus, Robert Crumb, Charles Burns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I could have done that. I could have, you know, skimmed off the top sort of, you know, whatever, eight in each one and made a kind of very straightforward show. But I think there's things in this show that are going to make you look at it a little bit differently no matter what. You know, no matter how much you know, you're going to look at it a little bit differently. So that's an added value for me to us to work. And then, you know, there's fabulous people to work with. What a luxury to have the pleasure of time with them. For me, that was a good thing.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, well, it'll be soon enough. It'll all be up. So, yeah, by all means.
Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, well, thanks for coming.